Good evening. I'm going to call to order the Planning Commission meeting for Tuesday, March 5th, 2019 at 6 o'clock. We have a roll call, please.
Commissioner Martin?
Here.
Commissioner Shiro?
Here.
Commissioner Maravilla?
Here.
Commissioner Montes?
Here.
And Commissioner Sage?
Here.
Please stand for the flag salute.
Please follow. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have a light agenda tonight, but is there any desire to revise the order of the agenda items as we have them here tonight?
No, thank you.
Seeing none. The next item on the agenda is for community comments. In reality, there's absolutely no one sitting in the audience with us tonight at this time, so there is no specific need to open a public comment period. Written communications, I know that we've got an updated, just notes or memorandum on our agenda item. Is there anything else that needs to be added to the agenda?
No, this evening it's just the one supplemental memorandum regarding item 9A.
Very good. Thank you very much, Mr. Downing. Next item is the consent agenda. This is the consideration for the approval of the minutes of our February 19th meeting. Assuming that my fellow commissioners have had an opportunity to review those minutes, do I hear a motion to approve those minutes?
I move to approve the minutes.
There's a motion and a second. Are there any revisions? We're kind of flying through this. Are any revisions or comments that people want to be able to make or Nate on these things? Very good. But we have a roll call on this item, please.
Commissioner Maravilla?
Yes.
Commissioner Sage?
Yes.
Commissioner Shiro?
Yes.
Commissioner Montes?
Yes.
And Commissioner Martin?
Yes. The minutes of the meeting for February 19th have been approved. Next item is a consideration of a time extension, 19-001 and 19-002. It's a one-year time extension in accordance with the Subdivision Map Act and the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code for the Pearwood Avenue Tract 3017 and tentative parcel map 09-003. Mr. Downing, do you have a presentation or comments on this item, please?
None this evening. Consent agenda item.
Very good. Then let's go to consent agenda item 7B. Probably should have done these together. Do I hear a motion to approve the extension?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Any kind of questions or comments for staff on this particular item?
Actually, I'm wondering if, Mr. Downing, you might have the map for, it's labeled TM09002, and that's only because the one that was included in the agenda packet was just a little difficult for me to make out.
Certainly, let me pull that up real quick.
You can't read that. This is what life was without glasses. It was what it looks like to me. It's a little bit better. It's still blurry.
Yes, so I apologize for the quality of this image. This was approved back before we really started utilizing computers all the time for everything. And so this is the best representation I have of the tentative parcel map 09002. It's a two parcel subdivision along with the city's tract 3017 over on this side. The remainder parcel of the city's tract is actually being joined in with this parcel map, while this parcel map is also providing access to the city down in the southern portion. So while these are two separate subdivisions, one being a parcel map, one being a tract map, they also share the plan unit development. They basically need each other to move forward, and this is the final time extension that we have on these projects.
Great, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. We have a motion and a second on the floor here. Can we have a roll call on this item, please?
Commissioner Shiro?
Yes.
Commissioner Montes?
Yes.
Commissioner Maravilla?
Yes.
Commissioner Sage?
Yes.
And Commissioner Martin?
Yes. The second consent item also is approved. We have no public hearing items agendized for tonight. We have a single non-public hearing item, a consideration of the 2018 General Plan Annual Report. Mr. Downing?
Thank you, Chair Martin, members of the Commission. I'm Matt Downing, Planning Manager. And tonight we're looking at the 2018 General Plan Annual Report. So the California Government Code requires each city to report to the Office of Planning and Research by April 1st the status of the implementation of its general plan. And so what this is a kind of snapshot in time of everything that we did in the last 12 months during 2018 regarding our general plan, any updates that we made, any significant work products we did to implement the general plan, things like that. You'll note that the housing data also must be submitted to the state, this being the Housing and Community Development Department, HCD. The City Council is the body that must review and basically file this annual report prior to staff being able to submit it. However, given that the Planning Commission is the keeper of the general plan in our city, we feel as a matter of course it's important to bring it to you and give you a chance to see all the work that you did over the past year as well to implement the general plan. And a little bit of background about what we have. We have seven required general plan elements: land use, circulation, housing, open space, conservation, noise, and safety. And then the city has also adopted three additional optional elements, that being agriculture, agriculture, economic development, parks and recreation. Agriculture is included with the conservation and open space element. And then you'll note also that even though these are optional elements, they're adopted as general plan elements, so they carry the same weight as all the remaining elements. And sometimes there's a tendency to kind of rank one element over another, but they're actually all carry the same amount of weight. The purpose of the General Plan Annual Report is to report data to the state regarding different land use trends that are happening in California, land use being the lowercase land use, not the land use element land use. Anything that really is happening in the state. So a few years ago, the drought was a very big topic, so you saw that kind of coming out in a lot of different cities' annual reports. It also helps inform local decision makers regarding issue areas and where resources need to be allocated. That's either sometimes financial resources or personnel resources. It's a factual document. It's not meant to provide a comprehensive list of everything that every city department did. It's not meant to evaluate, did we do that well or anything like that. It's just here's what we did this last year. We've talked before in years past that the fact one of the benefits and challenges of the General Plan Annual Report is that there's no state mandated format for non-housing items, so we can make it however we want. Some cities who have a lot more resources to dedicate to this have very cutting edge annual reports, and try as we might, one day we may get there, but right now our annual report format is in front of you. Now the housing data is the exception to that. So there were state required forms, reporting forms that we had used previously. This year, 2018, they've modified those, and I made a note in your staff report that I apologized for the difficulty on being able to read some of those tables. The spreadsheet given to us by the state is not the most user-friendly. I'm sorry, state, if you're watching. And so trying to get all of the things that the state's requiring for on some of these tables into a one-sheet legible format's difficult. But I do have the annual report, the electronic version available, and we can kind of go through that if we feel that so choose. The intent is not for the annual report to be time-consuming or elaborate. It's not, like I mentioned previously, it's not a comprehensive list of everything that we've done in the last year, but is really meant to just build upon itself year after year and give a snapshot in time of here's what we've been doing and here's the trends moving forward. So the biggest updates in the 2018 annual report, and I'll take this opportunity to note, you did receive an update to this earlier today, and I will also note there are several incorrect references to 2017 that I will go back and fix prior to this going to council. But we, in staff's review and trying to complete all of the required housing tables, we noted that previous year's housing element data, unit numbers we couldn't figure out where they were coming from. Turns out they were units issued occupancy and not issued building permits. The reason staff figured out that this might have been inaccurate is the change between last year's housing element tables and this year's housing element tables is now we're looking at not only entitled projects that were that turned in entitlement applications and whether or not they received those entitlements, but then they're also adding on if occupancy is given. So that left the middle category of permits issued as the standard consistent between the years. So realizing that that was inaccurately represented in previous years, staff went back and updated 2017's numbers to reflect not occupancies given but permits issued. So good news is we were underreporting our units in previous years. So that's been updated. In the supplemental memo, you'll note the RENA number table has also been updated to include 2014 through 2017. So we have all of that data for you as well. But currently, the updates that staff's working on are updates to the circulation element. We have almost a public review draft ready to go along with the environmental document for that, but that's still in the admin draft form. We're looking for that this year in 2019. We are actively working on our park and recreation element update, which we also, again, anticipate a public draft here this year. And the reason I also brought up the equal weight of the elements, some might say, well, the Parks and Rec element, why are we updating that? Why aren't we updating the land use element, or why aren't we updating the housing element right now? Again, they all carry equal weight. It was an opportunity. We saw an opportunity to update the Parks and Recreation element, and so that was given existing staff workloads, we were able to initiate that update. Other work efforts that we tackled in 2018, obviously, were personnel changes in the Community Development Department, specifically the Planning Division. That was something that we had to deal with, and it impacted our work levels. Also, the ever-changing rules and regulations on cannabis in the state of California, and what local jurisdictions can and can't do, and how the City Council determined to implement those allowable regulations. We also had to deal with, tied to the personnel changes, was the dissolution of some city boards. So the city's Architectural Review Committee, Historical Resources Committee, Parks and Recreation Commission, and Traffic Commission. And so we had to make code changes associated with those. We had a very hard work effort over the summer to apply for an active transportation program grant put on by the state. Using SB1 money from the gas tax. Turns out we were not successful in that. We were the third highest ranked project. This would be to implement the Halcyon Complete Streets plan, depending on which alternative the council chose. We were the third highest ranked project in the county, and no project in the county was recommended for funding. So it was a little disconcerting, but we're looking at kind of lessons learned and what we can what we can change next time moving forward. And we did receive, we received kudos on that project in the public outreach that we did in developing the two alternatives. But we'll talk more about that project when it comes to the commission in future months. We did work also on getting an entitlement for subarea one of the East Cherry Avenue specific plan. So that's the new Rugged Radio's homestead site, we'll call it. And as well as the Kmart remodel. So we saw Kmart leave its location on West Branch Street. We got an application in to remodel that shopping center or that portion of the shopping center. And again, one more item tied to the personnel changes is the Affordable Housing Program administration. So one of our staff members who retired was the sole person basically running the administration of our housing program. And it has been a very large learning curve for myself going, how do we do this? And learning the ins and outs and learning to read all these deed restrictions. And it's been very interesting. Now, planned updates, what we're planning both 2019-2020 is updating our housing element again. So our housing element cycle is coming up. Good news is it'll be longer this next time, so it won't be a five-year cycle. It'll be, I believe, an eight-year cycle, if I remember correctly. We're looking at starting that process given our lower staff numbers. We're trying to give ourselves more time to work on it. So probably in late 2019, maybe the summer into late 2019 and into 2020. We're still looking at trying to get the land use element updated. It's always nice if you can tackle a lot of these at once and together. But sometimes we just pick them off as we go and kind of get what we can get. Also, we're eyeballing the safety element. You'll notice I have the county hazard mitigation plan listed up there. We had a great opportunity these last couple of years to join a countywide effort. So rather than having our own local hazard mitigation plan, to actually join forces and get a countywide hazard mitigation plan that has specific annexes for the city of Rio Grande. So we'll have our own section of that plan. Good thing about that is we got grant funding, which covers a lot of it. So that's a pretty big work effort that we're going to pay a little bit for and significantly reduce the impact to city personnel resources, as well as updates to state law, obviously, with changing conditions and regulations associated with the wildfires that we've been experiencing in the last couple of years. So there's new things that we're kind of keeping an eye on for that. The most recent update, it remains the same, was the 2017 land use map update that was associated with the East Cherry Avenue specific plan. That was a kind of wild overview of what we did the last year. In terms of environmental review and public notification for tonight's meeting, the project's exempt per section 15061B3, which is the kind of common sense rule that CEQA applies to projects that will have an impact to the environment, and reporting on what we did last year will not. The agenda was also posted in accordance with government code, and we haven't received any comments from the public on this matter this evening. And it is recommended at this time that the Planning Commission, following anticipated discussion, receive and file the amended 2018 General Plan Annual Report, and we'll pass that along to the City Council later this month for final acceptance, and then off to the state as required. So I'm more than happy to answer any questions you have.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Downing. Are there questions for staff tonight concerning this report, kind of anything in general or anything kind of specific as we all go through the learning curve on looking at this? Ms. Montez, you have a...
Yes, I just wanted to thank you, Mr. Downing, for that overview. And I was just curious, do you happen to know who what county did receive the active transportation program grant?
I don't. I do. What's interesting about that grant program is they have different people from all over the state reviewing the application. That's not a Sacramento-based body or a Bay Area-based body or a Southern California-based body. There are reviewers all across the state to kind of give equal weight to all of the applications. I don't remember which Caltrans districts received the fund or recommended for funding.
Okay.
But I do know after talking to the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments that nobody in our county were recommended to receive funds.
Okay, thank you. That's it for me.
Mr. Sage?
Yes, I've got a couple of quick questions, Matt. How do you define short-term rental versus the vacation rentals?
So short-term rental is a generic term that we define basically as any rental of residential units less than 30 days. So,
which would also be a vacation rental.
So in our rules, we have a vacation rental and we have a homestay, both of which are short-term rentals. The vacation rental is it does not include the property owner living on site, whereas a homestay is renting a room up to two rooms in a residence that's occupied by the homeowner.
Then can you use vacation rentals in your count for housing?
Great question. We don't believe so. So if we, what we've seen is an increase in the number of accessory dwelling unit applications that are then having requests come in to convert those to short-term rentals. So vacation rentals, homestays, that type of thing. Our housing element does have a policy to monitor that and either address that loss of rental units through increased density in other areas or by some other mechanism. Interestingly, the council at its last meeting directed staff to, in the next 6 months, bring a kind of status report on that to them. Because as you know, in reviewing our administrative decisions, we've seen quite an uptick in the number of vacation rental applications.
Yes.
And if the first couple of years, the applications between vacation rentals and homestays were pretty equal, and then homestays leveled out and vacation rentals just kept going. So we've been monitoring that, and we plan to bring something forward.
Okay. Next question I have is that since all housing development is very dependent upon developers willing to, you know, to come in and build housing. So how do we get developers to address the types of housing that we are trying to target?
Yeah, a couple of different ways. So obviously, particularly in our area, it's very much market driven. So what is the market demanding? Or what do people in our market want? We are kind of seeing a trend into the smaller lot, but still single family detached residential units, kind of the more affordable by design type units, given that they're sometimes attached, sometimes detached, but definitely on smaller lots, less landscape maintenance, all of that. And we've seen several applications approved for that type of housing. But in the bigger picture, one of the things the cities can do is require the different income level units to be included in projects. Our inclusionary housing ordinance has basically, you can do either. You can include them in your residential development project and deed restrict them for a minimum 30-year period, or you can pay an in-lieu fee, and which is 1% of the construction cost for that unit. And then that goes into our affordable housing fund, and that gives us the opportunity to leverage those funds with different, we've got some lightning and thunder,
yeah.
With different nonprofit organizations that specialize in that type of thing. So a good example of that is the Haslow project at 224 South Halcyon. They're a 20-unit, low-income restricted for 55 years project that the city did contribute some money to help them purchase the land. It was a much longer process than I boiled it down to in one sentence. But there are some communities that require, no, you have to include those units in your projects. What I have learned since losing our staff member who dealt with housing, that takes a lot of time to administer. Because there's a deed restriction for every unit. There's a process every time somebody wants to sell it, it's laid out, the city shall respond in a certain number of days with this information, and so when that comes in, regardless of whatever other work you have to do, you have to stop and answer that. So we are struggling a little bit with how do we encourage these, how do we actually see these units come through? Our experience, particularly post-recession, when the restricted prices were higher than the market rate prices, was utilizing those in lieu fees to get Haslow or Habitat for Humanity to actually build these restricted income units.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Well, since your responses seem to generate a lot of thunder, I think I'll stop asking questions.
Mr. Shiro?
Yeah, so just to piggyback on that, seeing that our governor has made the affordable housing issue kind of front and center over the last couple of weeks with what he's proposed, and hopefully that turns out for the best for our city, and then we can get some of that money because we meet our numbers. And Matt, thank you for keeping track of our numbers, because there have been some cities around here very close to us who have not been filling out these reports, and I know they take a lot of time, but it keeps us out of trouble, and it gives us an actual idea of what's going on in our city. So just specifically, the 31 on page 7 of our report, the numbers that were amended, so 31 units permitted from 2014 to 2018 in the low category. Is the Haslow project included in that yet?
It is not included in that. Okay. So, right. Though the Haslow, actually, they just received their building permit last week, I believe. So they'll be included in our 2019.
So the next one, okay.
Correct. All What's right. interesting is those, if you go to the housing tables in the Appendix A, those are included in the new entitlement section. Okay. So we do have the 20 okay. low-income units in the entitlement section.
Okay. And just backing up a little bit, so we have this fund and a housing like Haslow or whoever comes before you with a project. The sites that those projects are on, we have a map of sites that where those projects are. We picked out sites. Is that correct?
So what it is in our the way the housing element laws have changed over time, specifically with regard to the regional housing needs assessment numbers, the RENA numbers, they used to be very a lot looser. So here's the number of units you need to plan for. And plan for was a very loose term. And so we could say, well, there's a vacant site here that we're gonna zone this, that could be this number of units. Let's say on Commissioner Martin's vineyard, 10 acre ag parcel, we're gonna rezone that to high density housing and put 100 units per acre. And so that meets our RENA numbers. Then what the state came back and said, well, you can't just point to a spot on the map and say, yeah, we're gonna put it there. You actually have to look at the site and say, reasonably, what really can you put there? So now your housing elements do have site inventory maps that say, here are vacant lands, here are opportunity sites where it's, what's the word? I'm blanking on the word, underutilized sites, okay. Where there might be a big lot that's zoned for increased density and there's one house on it. So that's an opportunity site to redevelop that lot. So we do have a map with those sites on it, but not necessarily mandating that this goes here. Okay. Obviously, getting to the changes in the housing law will, now that you're seeing the increased planning for and potentially a lot of communities not meeting those numbers, it'll be interesting to see how the legislature changes the rules further in terms of actually providing those numbers
sure.
by cities. So we're keeping an eye on that, definitely.
So where does that map exist, and when does it get submitted to the state? It's not part of this report, correct?
Correct. It's not part of this report. It's actually included in our housing element. So what we do is we locally adopt the housing element, and then we have to send it to HCD, where they make sure it complies with state law and actually certify the housing element. And one of the thing, the certification of your housing element makes you eligible for funding, state funding.
Right.
Now what you're seeing in the news is non-compliant cities are being threatened to remove your certification of your housing element, so you're no longer eligible for funding.
Transportation funding.
So I kind of anticipate more of that type of thing to happen in the future, but we'll see how it ends up working.
And then, do we have access to that housing element? Is that online somewhere?
Certainly it is. It's I can quickly tell you how to get there. If you go to the arroyogrande.org website, it's go up to the heading that says departments, hover over that, click community development, click into planning, and it'll be in the housing element.
Okay. And that would have a map of what, I mean, that's basically the report that gets sent to them. Is that how it?
Correct. So it's actually our full-on housing element. Let's see if I can quickly pull it up for you.
Okay, cool. Okay.
And so the map is in here, I believe it's.
And that's what basically gets submitted to the state.
Correct.
And then they approve it, and then once they approve it, then you publish it, I suppose.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. I noticed in the later on, we're talking about funding things that you're working on right now. With the updating the housing in lieu fee to be consistent with modern development costs, are you willing to elaborate that on? Even though you haven't come to total, are we talking about raising that fee? Is that
yes?
Yeah,
yeah. Because obviously the cost of everything has gone up, and we're looking at, are we consistent with our neighboring jurisdictions and with the county in terms of.
Okay.
Or are we low, or are we high, whatever that may be, but I anticipate we're probably low.
I know that generally speaking, developers that do affordable housing are has low and these, but is it possible for a developer who just wants to do the right thing, even though there's probably less money in it, but according to Gavin Newsom, he's going to be giving some of that money out, so maybe that will change. If they were to come into the city and say, hey, you know, what is our, do you have any sites picked out for affordable housing? And because when you look at these numbers, it's very low. And this could be a pencil thing. I've never penciled out a very low housing project. But we've got our allocation is 60 and we've permitted zero in the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. To me, it seems like, gosh, that could be one complex. I mean, it doesn't seem like it. When I first... You know, my first impression of when I read the first low-income housing bill that was last year, one of the ones that I think that we were, kind of touching on, it was so accusatory of local government. But when as I read it, I thought, oh, they're going to be asking for us to turn into San Diego, or there was no specific numbers in that particular bill, but it was just a blanket statement of basically NIMBYism and local government have caused this problem, and we're going to fix it, and we don't care what you kind of think. But I look at these numbers, and I think to me, this is totally attainable. It is not that those numbers are not going to ruin our town. We're not going to have 50,000 people here because of these numbers. They're just it really to me looks like they're almost saying just get the build out. If you're at 17,000 people right now and you're at 20,000 as a total build out, this isn't going to get you there as far as the number of units. But so does that? What's the process for that? Somebody comes in and says, "Hey, I'm how." Who do they talk to? Where do they go? What, besides the housing element, would you guys assist somebody besides, doesn't have to be Haslow, I guess is my point that I'm trying to drive home, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. We, anybody who is interested in providing that type of housing, you know, we're here to help. We can help identify sites. We can help talk about if you have a site already, what are the constraints or what needs to happen to get whatever you're looking for. My experience up to this point is the funding associated with producing those units is what's really they don't pencil out.
Lack, right.
Yeah. And sure. And maybe that is changing with increased opportunities for funding right. through the state.
Right.
So we might see that. And even, I think it's SB 32, which is the streamlining. So if you're not meeting your RENA numbers and a project comes in and they want to put in very low income units and they check all these different boxes, they have a stream by per the state, they have a streamlined entitlement process and they to get them through faster and to get them constructing to reduce those costs, essentially the entitlement costs. Also my experience with that is they might be packing too many requirements for projects to comply with that
right.
streamlined criteria.
Right.
So it's definitely a balance. And I think they're probably getting there, but I don't think they're quite there yet.
And as far as our money goes, that we have from our in-lieu fees, how exactly is that implied to like a Haslow where we've got this fund now? Do you buy the land? Do you help them buy the land? Do you, where does that money go, I guess?
It depends. It depends on the project. It depends on what they need. So the Haslow example, it was prior to the CUP even coming in the door. We had money set aside and talking to Haslow back in, I believe it was 2010, looking at, okay, here's this group that's going to provide these amount of units. They need funding to purchase the site and to move forward with it. How can we help? Well, we have a pot of money to help pay for the purchasing of the site with low interest and that type of thing. I can't remember if in their case there was interest or not, so don't quote me on that. But another example is Habitat for Humanity on Briscoe, 8 units that are the sweat equity low-income units that we were talking about that were approved last year. In that instance, we utilized the affordable housing in lieu fee money to pay the development impact fees associated with those units. And that was the request that went to the council. The council said, yes, let's utilize that money to pay this piece of your puzzle so that's one less thing you have to worry about. So there's a number of different ways to do it. And we've seen pretty good successes on different projects. People self-help housing on Cortland. There's a senior living complex, and that I'm blanking on the name, on North Cortland that we had some financial interest in as well. So there's a number of different ways to do it, and so far we've seen some successes.
Chair Martin, are we going to be commenting on any of this, or we just?
Yeah, let's get through our questions, okay. And then we'll comment on that vote. So
that's all the questions I have right now. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Maravilla, do you have a questions for Mr. Downing?
I guess just going along with some of the questions that you were asking, most of the things that are being built right now are the above moderate housing?
Correct.
Is there caps on like another end? Caps on like that end?
In terms of price caps on above,
well, not
or
price
like
caps,
number of
but
units.
Like how many units are going to be in that price area?
No, not necessarily. So the typical kind of unit cap on that would be our typical development standards. So across the across the city, different sites zone different things. If you want to do a whole market rate residential development, you might have a lower density than if you did affordable units, and then you get a density bonus,
right?
That type of thing. So there are incentives, but
there's nothing
other than our general build out, what our city can build out to. There's no cap on the above moderate
okay.
number of units.
And then I'm assuming this is just going through the, what was it, the tables, the table D, like a lot of the things on there are marked, you know, from staff constraints. Is that because of losing the housing person that retired?
It's a couple of different, the great thing about planning is there's current planning and long-range planning. So a lot of this, the program work is long-range planning. Mm-hmm. That's typically the first thing that gets put on hold when your current planning ramps up.
Yeah.
And so for this last year, a lot of these housing program implementation items were not necessarily addressed because, number one, that person left, and because, number two, there was less personnel to do the work that's still coming in.
Right.
But we, in going, it's always good. I enjoy the annual report time because it's a good reminder of, oh, yeah, we are, these are the things we need to be doing, and we need to find a way to fit some of these in, like the in lieu fee, and making sure that's consistent with our neighbors, so that we're more competitive and have opportunities to provide funding when necessary. So it's a good reminder to get some of these things done. And even the short-term rentals,
right,
we're sitting back going, okay, I'm seeing this uptick. Oh, there's a policy that says we got to keep an eye on that. And okay, this is now at a level that we should raise this to the decision makers. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I have no more questions.
Okay, I just have a couple. On page 8, you referred to making a couple of corrections on the dating under the noise element and on the economic development element. Both of those say 2017. Are those two that might identify that'll just be updated to 2018?
Correct.
And am I to assume that there were no text amendments to the noise element in 2018?
Correct.
Which is why that was kind of bypassed. I have a question kind of along the line of Mr. Shiro. If we go back on page 7 on the bottom of these arena numbers, I'm curious to know the 12 units they got finaled under low income. And is that just this year, or is that the last 4 or 5 years that on that far right on that lower chart?
That is just this year.
Just this year. What development or where were those?
So great question. Those are our accessory dwelling units. So we, given the state legislation that came through saying the city shall make it easier for properties to build accessory dwelling units because they are a method to meeting low-income housing needs, the city is taking that to mean that our accessory dwelling units can be counted as a non-deed restricted low-income unit. So those 12 units are ADUs in the city.
And in most cases, ask you to make an assumption, but in most cases, people that are coming in and getting these permitted and putting them into the inventory, they are renting them out at whatever price they may be renting them out.
Correct.
But they are renting them out to renters, and whether that's a short-term or long-term rental type of deal.
Correct. This last year, we only had a couple that we categorized as owner-occupied accessory dwelling units because we knew that those were being built for family members, so that's how we were categorizing those. All the other ones were for rent, and like I said, they're non-deed restricted, so there's nothing out there saying you can only rent it at this income category. But being that it's a second unit, it's a smaller unit, it's on a lot with an existing single-family residence, by design, they typically should be more affordable in our area.
Okay. Thank you. Those are the questions that I have. I don't want to beat this up too much, but if someone have any kind of specific comments that they would like to make. And I'm going to start off and do it in reverse order how I typically do it. And I'm just going to highlight the single item, and I may take some of the thunder out of Mr. Shiro's comments, but I would like to encourage City Council, when they review this report and this submission to the state, that they take a specific look at in lieu fees and see that that gets I'm just going to say highlighted or emphasized so we can be encouraging more construction in the low and, more affordable housing. I appreciate how hard staff is working, but I recognize this is what a great opportunity once a year to go, oh, we need to be doing this, and oh, we need to be doing that. We're really not the final decision-making body on this, but we're kind of reviewing this and recommending City Council, you know, approve this or whatever. They're, in this case, they're the decision-making body, but I'd like to see that comment added to our recommendation. And if there's others that they would, you know, my fellow commissioners would like to see added, I'm happy to include those. But rather than just kind of rubber stamp this and send it on, I think it's our opportunity to say, hey, affordable housing is important. Let's don't lose sight of that as we move forward with this, you know, accepting or recognizing, you know, the information, the data that's in here, and how can we make that a more active part of our daily workflow. Any other comments, Mr. Shiro? Do you have other comments you'd like to make?
Sure. So I think part of the reason why this issue is kind of near and dear to my heart is that having a couple of families of some really good employees that would love to live closer to where they work, and some of them are living in Guadalupe and Santa Maria, and I see how the unaffordability of where we are affects us. And I guess, you know, when I, just going back to the first time that I started delving into this and seeing the language from some of the state bills as to pointing the finger at local government and really in particular NIMBYism, not so much government officials. But the reality is that, you know, as inflammatory as it sounded, and I had to really look at it, it's true. We have, when you look at the numbers point out itself. If you take all of those levels and include above moderate levels, we've built 36 point something units average per year, permitted units in the last 5 years. And that is not development run gone crazy in my mind. It's not even putting a dent in it, or not a big dent, it's a very little dent. But when you look at even the RENA allocation, that's really not all that much, you know. But I guess, you know, I know that there's we have seven elements to look at, and so when we focus on just one, it's probably not right. But the reality to me, this issue is an issue that's going to be forced on us by the state. It's going to be forced on our citizens. They're going to have to confront it, and we're going to have to be the ones making those decisions in accordance with state law, which is going to be most likely changing. So I guess that's why I wanted to entitle it. I really wanted to highlight it. I think these are great numbers, you know, to look at, but I think we can be doing better, and I think it's one of those issues that we do need to solve it somehow. And unfortunately, it looks like the state is going to step in, or fortunately, depending upon how you look at it. But I just, that's why I highlighted it. So that's all I have.
Very good, Ms. Mayor Velia, do you have something to add?
Nothing to add, but to agree with as well. I'm a little worried about state actions in the next couple of years.
Mr. Sage, any comments you'd like to add?
Just maybe a little bit of a repeat in that all of this is being addressed by the city, by the state, but it seems that the big control point is, and always will be, the developers. If we're not concentrating or figuring out a way to provide incentives, and whatever incentives we've had so far, these numbers are telling me they don't work. The numbers that are the developers are developing are in the above moderate range. That's where the money is. So if we want to address low income or affordable housing, to me it has to be some incentive strong enough to get developers to actually build. No matter what the state does, no matter what the city does, we still have the willingness or the lack of willingness of developers to build those necessary properties. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Ms. Montez, any other comments you'd like to add?
Actually, I have one more question and then
fire away.
a comment. As far as workforce housing goes, where would that fall within the categories? Would that be moderate?
So workforce housing is an interesting income category because the workforce housing as defined by the state government code is upwards of, I believe, 120% of the county median income, if I'm remembering that percentage correctly. Okay. Whereas when I hear workforce, I don't think 120% of the median income of the county. So that's actually between kind of the moderate and above moderate. It's an identified income category above moderate, but below above moderate.
So I haven't taken a look at the map that's within the housing element. So if you have an area or a piece of property that's identified for low income housing, do you have one that's identified for workforce housing?
It's basically looking, the inventory map is looking at housing in terms of number of units, not necessarily income categories.
Okay.
Not saying that here's where you can concentrate this income or segment of the population, but here's where you can have this population of units. What we have been talking about for a number of years, and it's actually called out in a couple of the policies, is rather than using the term workforce housing, because it kind of sends that mixed message, is more attainable housing. What's attainable to the employees of this area? And so one of our policies is to actually have a definition for attainable housing and likely following that have some kind of local income restriction or incentives to get and promote attainable housing.
Okay, so my comment is that I support attainable housing and I would like to see future efforts focused on attainable housing. Thank you.
Mr. Downing, and on this item, it says it's recommended that the commission receive and file the annual report for final acceptance by the city council. Is there a motion of some kind? Is there some more formalized action that we're expected to be or encouraged to take tonight?
Other than no motion necessary, no resolution necessary. I think we got pretty good discussion, and housing is the hot topic this year. So we will definitely make sure to include some of the comments when this item goes to council.
Okay. Unless there's something else, I'm happy to move on. So I think that we've discussed this.
I have one more question. It's actually about another element, but
fire away.
The Parks and Rec update. When will that be finished? I guess
our original goal was March. Then obviously you get into it. Now we're probably looking around June or July.
Okay. And that would, once that's done, will that be presented to us or what's mm-hmm. the, okay.
Yeah. So right now we are working through an admin draft of that, kind of making sure that all of the, policies that are in there are based on the community surveys that have been done, and all the community outreach that's been done, reflective of where we are right now as a community. Once we get that admin draft done and into a public review draft, we'll put that out for public review. We'll bring it to you folks at a public hearing, that type of thing. So you'll have a chance to review and comment, and we'll hear public testimony on proposed policies and before it goes to council.
Thank you.
I think we're ready to move on then. Thank you very much. Item 10 is just the notice of administrative decisions. I see in the notes that this literally is just 120 square foot small storage building that's being constructed at this church location here at Oak Park. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Any questions or comments about this administrative item that's included just for our edification?
No. Just I'll comment, since you pointed out that it is a small building. Our code does require in the public facility zone accessory structures to be processed under a plot plan review to make sure that we see where they're going, how things circulate, because they are typically sites where you see a lot of public at once. So that's why that's in there, and that's why we have to process that.
It's pretty modest in size. I just was noting that. So.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for the clarification. Okay, any other commission communications as we begin to wind down at tonight's meeting?
I've got a couple.
Please.
So I can publicly announce that Five Cities Youth Baseball, the 13-year-old team that won the World Series, Babe Ruth World Series, we have been asked to host the 14-year-old Pacific Southwest Regional, which is the one level below the World Series. So that team will be playing on their home field in July. They will be, if they win, they'll be going back to the World Series, which would be a great thing for our city, seeing that we haven't had a team in that World Series since 1977, prior to last year. So, on that same note, Five Cities Youth Baseball has been, and a lot of the leagues have been impacted by some of our raised fees. So haven't done this before, but I'd like to take the opportunity to plug the third Tuesday fundraiser on March 19th at Rooster Creek from 5:00 until 10:00. 100% of the net proceeds of everybody that goes in there. Don't need a flyer. You just have to show up and eat and drink and be merry, and that will go to Five Cities Youth Baseball.
Nice.
So,
that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's great news. Congratulations and good luck.
Yeah.
Any other comments?
I actually have a question for staff.
Sure.
It's regarding a training for us commissioners. My question is a follow-up to the deputy city clerk's email that the training in Long Beach had filled up pretty quickly. Has there been any progress as far as locating other opportunities?
It was quite unfortunate when we asked and it's already booked. We went, apparently the same thing happened last year, but our neighboring city didn't end up sending folks. That's why we were able to send some last year. We are still trying. We're still reaching out. I believe our neighboring jurisdiction, our immediate neighbors are attending. But we are continuing to ask other communities if they have spots available, and we'll definitely let you know if those are.
Okay. Thank you.
And as soon as they are, that way we can swoop in and grab those spots.
Yeah, I guess everyone wanted to stay on the Queen Mary.
Apparently.
Thank you.
Okay, any staff communications?
Just a couple. Some of you might have received the email from, I believe, our deputy city clerk earlier today. If you are in need of completing your ethics training requirement, you gotta love more trainings. You can do that online. It's 2 hours. I don't want to say it's easy because it's 2 hours, but you do learn something. You do walk away with something. And also, I wanted to kind of take a straw poll of attendance, anticipated attendance for the next meeting. We have one large project that'll be in front of you, and then we also have the election of officers the next meeting. So I want to ensure that we're not going to miss anybody or want to delay the election by any means. So I see a lot of nodding. I'll assume everybody's planning.
March 19th.
So, yep, plan on being here.
Perfect. Okay. And that'll do it for staff this evening.
And that's it for the meeting tonight. Thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned.